This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off a brand new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Ajax, this is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts, back with you again for another 90-odd minutes of fun. My name is Chris Sims. With me as always, my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing tonight?
Chris, I am in good spirits, and I hope you are too.
Here's a peek behind the curtain for everybody. Every time that we sit down to record, like, before we get on the show, this is before we do the interviews and everything, I say, how are you tonight, Matt? And Matt inevitably says, chillin'. And 90% of the time, I have to do the whole Wu-Tang Clan, the whole Protect Your Neck intro.
It's become tradition at this point.
Yeah. And I don't, like, we've done it so much that I don't want to do it anymore, but I can't. I can't stop myself from doing it, so I'm glad you don't do it on the show.
Well, next week I will, just to spite you,
no,
I guess.
No, I
won't. I am feeling well. I hope you're doing well as well, Chris, because we have a great show this week. We're going to be talking to our guest, Matt Sumo, who is the co-writer of Dedication, a relatively new comic series from Double Take Universe, which is the brand new comics imprint from Take-Two Interactive, the video game company. So, you know, it's fancy. A really interesting take on grocery stores and Night of the Living Dead and the way that characters react to zombies. And we're going to talk to him about all of that stuff, as well as Paul Heyman. But Chris, before we get to talking to Matt, we've got some business to take care of. Let's start by talking about Patreon.
We have people who have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they kick in a couple of bucks every month to support the show, to support you and me, keep the lights on, pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. And I had to re-upgrade my phone because I used too much data playing Pokemon. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for that. That's this week's report on where your money's going.
We don't have any names to read out this week. No new Patreon supporters. But if you would like to support us on Patreon, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/warrocketajax, kick in a few bucks, and get lots of cool stuff, including ad-free episodes of this show and Movie Fighters, which is now monthly. You may not have heard the news if you didn't listen to the newest Movie Fighters, but we're going to be adding a tier on Patreon to maybe do a monthly snack situation special within Movie Fighters. That's the hottest segment in podcasting, and you might be getting a monthly, you know, 20 minutes, a half hour of snack situation. If we hit that tier on Patreon, that might be a reason to kick in some money.
And let me tell you, you might be thinking, if you're not a Movie Fighters listener, you might be thinking, why would I pay these two dopes to sit around and eat snacks? Look, sometimes it's Trader Joe's pretzels with the peanut butter inside. Sometimes it's that, okay? Sometimes it's just snacks we have around the house. Walmart's got All Dressed chips again back here in America, so I'm very excited about those. But lately, snack situation is out of control. Snack situation is so out of control that today I got a box of snacks from Iceland.
We have had two boxes of snacks from Australia. We just got a box of snacks from Iceland, and we have been promised a box of healthy snacks because our friend Kathy thinks that we're going to die.
Which, look, we are honor and duty bound to eat all the snacks that are sent to us. So yes, like Matt, I gotta say, eating snacks with you is the highlight of my month.
Yes, and we could be doing it in its own special every month if we hit that tier on Patreon. I'm going to be adding it in very soon. So if we hit that tier, we'll be doing a snack situation special every month. In addition to that, there's bonus audio on Patreon. There's art that only Patreon supporters get. So much cool stuff there. So if you can help us out there, please do. If not, the snack situation special will be on the regular Movie Fighters RSS feed. It'll be on iTunes where anybody can get it. Warrock and Ajax will remain for free. Movie Fighters is still free. Now that we've talked a little bit about Patreon, let's do some checks and recs. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
I've got a busy week coming up, but this past week I haven't done a whole lot. Mostly just pacing back and forth in my apartment waiting for Pokemon to show up, but we already talked about that last week. So I am going to my check is something that might at first sound like a rec and may in fact be a rec, but I am not presenting it as such. I am presenting it for the listener to decide for themselves. Matt, what do you know about the Shannara Chronicles?
Very little. I've seen Aiden tweeting about it. That is it.
Yeah. It originally aired on MTV, and now it's on Netflix. It is an adaptation of the Shannara Chronicles books by Terry Brooks. It's bananas, and I love how bananas it is, and the way that it's bananas. We watched the pilot episode 3 times, because we were trying to figure out if we missed them explaining anything that was going on, and they do not. Apparently, from what we've been able to figure out, the TV show is an adaptation of the 2nd book in the series, and everything is just presented to you as though you should already know. It's not hard to figure out. They're pretty upfront. They're like, oh, these are elves, these are trolls, whatever. But people will just say things. Oh, yeah, you know, he came out of the Forbidden, and he's trapped in the Black Henge. Amberlee, she's got to leave Arbalan to go deal with him. And we're just like, oh, right, of course, right. Yeah, you don't want the Rovers to get between you and Arbalan. It is all presented as though they are talking about buying groceries. It's amazing. It's an MTV show, so the entire cast is just tiny, beautiful angels.
Except I'm looking at the Shannara Chronicles Wikipedia page right now. Uh-huh. They're all tiny, tiny, beautiful angels, except for fucking John Rhys Davies. And James Remar. Oh, and Manu Bennett, who was fucking Deathstroke.
Is he the guy who plays the druid who does the Stone Cold Stunner on a shape-shifting demon at one point in like episode 5?
He is a druid, according to Wikipedia, and he was also Deathstroke on Arrow.
The first episode opens, well, you know, Amberlee, she wants to become one of the Chosen, so she's got to run the gauntlet, you know?
Of course. Yeah, sure.
And the whole plot of the episode is that, like no woman has ever run the gauntlet. And she literally says, it doesn't say in the rules that a woman can't run the gauntlet.
So they air butt it?
They air butt it. Aiden was losing her mind tonight because there's like a troll that shows up and fights a bunch of people and then grows to like Power Rangers monster size. And she's like, all this is happening because of Air Bud rules. We're having a good time. Matt, what's your check this week?
My check is Pokemon Go. I keep hitting these points where I think I'm going to stop.
Yeah, good luck with that, buddy. You're in now.
And then I don't. Because, like, at first I hit a point where I was like, all right, I'm at level 5. I can go to a gym. I can join a team. Team Mystic all the way.
Of course. Of course you're Team Mystic. Of course.
I'm joining the Wisdom team.
What do you think I am?
Oh, I know that you're Team Valor.
Of course. Yeah, you got it. You got me.
One, because I could guess it, and two, because you told me.
Oh, did I tell you? I forgot. I'm sorry.
It would have been cooler if I had just guessed it. I would, go to the nearest gym, which is hilariously a urgent care clinic. So here I am sitting in the parking lot of an urgent care clinic, trying to battle people in this gym. And that was a Team Mystic gym. So I, battled whoever the person who ran that place was, and then didn't get to stay there, and I was very confused by that. And so that was when I was kind of like, okay, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. Then I leveled up an EV, or evolved an EV, to get a Flareon, and suddenly I had like this powerful Pokemon that I could maybe go battle in other gyms with, and I was like, all right, I'll keep going a little bit. Then I ran out of Pokeballs, and I was like, I don't want to walk all the way to the Pokestop that's like, you know, just far enough away that it's kind of a hassle to walk there from my house. So I was like, okay, I think I'm not, maybe not going to play for a while. Then I went to downtown Asheville, which is fucking ripe with Pokestops. And I got like 100 Pokeballs, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll keep doing this. Then last night I go and win at a couple of gyms and immediately lose those. And I was kind of like, maybe that's it. And now I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of like just finding Pokemon that I haven't found yet. So I'm wondering when I'm going to hit that point of being done.
Aiden and I already have like a date planned for tomorrow night where we're just going to go downtown and walk around in my small southern town where I live, because Pokestops are keyed to, among other things, churches and historical markers. So finally, here's your reason for living in the South. I went to the post office, which is right downtown, the other day. I'm still doing mystery boxes, $15, 10 random comics for my collection. And I'm still doing my yard sale, which is all paperbacks and hardcovers now. So check it out, the-isb.com/yardsale2016.txt, capital Y, capital S, and then the number is 2016.txt. And I noticed that, like, downtown, where, like, you know, the big First Presbyterian Church is, and where, like, the Vietnam Memorial and the Confederate Memorial and the World War II Memorial, it's like, oh, there's, like, 30 Pokestops here. Time to stock up. So we have made a date to, like, go look at historical markers, which is great because that is a thing we would want to do anyway.
In downtown Asheville, it's like historical markers, churches, and also like public art, which is everywhere.
I know Joe Hunter, there's like a statue outside of a topless bar that is a Pokestop. It's like, oh boy, maybe filter these out a little bit.
I also got so Marlene had a show last night, an improv show that went really well. They donated all the proceeds to Our Voice, which is a really great local organization. After the show was over, we went to the Thirsty Monk, which is a bar right across, like right around the corner from the theater where they did the show, which is also a Pokestop. And everybody, or not everybody in the improv group, but several members of the improv group, we suddenly all were talking about Pokemon Go. And there was a moment where we ended up running down the street to go to a Pokestop that had a lure on it. And that was kind of like the moment where I was like, maybe I'm just in this.
See, like that's a really cool thing. Like I'm really excited about moving soon to like a city with a downtown that's fun to walk around, because I feel like it'll be fun to kind of walk around a place and go to parks and just see people out playing Pokemon. Because, you know, you're in Asheville, where obviously it's going to be a big thing. You know, Shannon Manor and David are down in Atlanta, and so they've been walking around and seeing, like, people out playing Pokemon. And you know, Jordan and Betty up in Somerville. Like, everybody's having this big city Pokemon experience that I'm really looking forward to having a little more of.
Oh, that big city Pokemon experience.
Listen, it's all I've ever wanted.
One last thing, and then my check will be over. After we left the Thirsty Monk last night, and I was walking down the street, actually having just come from trying to do battle at a gym and ending up not doing that, I had my phone in my hand, but I had closed the Pokemon app. And this group of dudes in a pickup truck, I tweeted about this, it was like seven guys in a pickup truck. There was a guy in the front seat, a guy in the passenger seat, and like four people in the bed of the truck, like riding in the back, which I'm pretty sure is not legal. They see me walking down the street with my phone. Somebody in the back goes, "Pikachu!" And then the guy in the passenger seat just goes, "Yeah!"
Oh, Pokemon Go is the only thing that makes the South workable.
It's bringing people together. All right, yeah. Let's make some recommendations, Chris. What do you have to recommend?
I have a recommendation that's pretty obvious to the point where I kind of feel like it might also be your rec, but we'll see. I just want to recommend the Cruiserweight Classic. We talk a lot about pro wrestling on this show, much to the annoyance of certain listeners. But if you're curious, if you want to like see what pro wrestling's about, and you've heard all the like, yeah, I know storylines and it's comic booky and all that stuff, but I just don't see the appeal. Maybe check out, like, get your free month of the WWE Network and check out the first episode of the Cruiserweight Classic. Because first of all, this is WWE doing something that I don't think anyone ever expected them to do, which is that they're getting a bunch of talent from indie stuff, from Japan, from other countries, from Europe, that they don't necessarily have under contract, and they're giving them a showcase. You know, some of them are people, you know, who are already on NXT. Some of them are people who are former WWE wrestlers who are coming back. Some of them are, like, big names that they are obviously, like, look, if Kota Ibushi is not signed to WWE, like, in 3 months, then I will be shocked. That aspect of it is really cool, and also it's the easiest kind of wrestling to really get into. It's fast-paced, it's the flippy guys, it's the high-flying stuff. It's the smaller, quicker, younger, for the most part, wrestlers that are just kind of showing off their skills on a very big stage. For some of them, the biggest stage that they've ever had. Physically, it's really easy to kind of see what's going on and get into what's going on and be impressed by it. But also, everybody in this tournament looks like a Street Fighter character. And they're kind of like even the like the way the brackets are presented, they have like that big Street Fighter versus.
Yeah.
So they're clearly like, yeah, this is the real life World Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, it's
everybody's
like,
representing a country. It's like really fun.
Even the like the graphics that they're using, like there's the versus that's very Street Fighter,
super Street Fighter.
But they're also like the 3D models in like the graphics that they're using for the show that are kind of like robot Street Fighter characters.
Yes.
Like it's all very Street Fighter influenced.
And there's Corey Graves reporting to you live from the holodeck / inside a Sega Genesis.
It has the two most excited, like the most excited announce team I've ever heard on WWE programming.
To the point where maybe the one guy can tone it down a little bit.
It's Mauro Ranallo from SmackDown and Daniel Bryan, who is one of my favorites ever. And there's just one part in the first episode where this one wrestler from Chile does a shooting star press from the apron, from like to the outside, and they both in stereo say shooting star press, yeah. Super excitedly.
Yeah, and they're really like really kind of building up all the wrestlers. Like even though there's obvious like faces and heels, you know, good guys and bad guys. They're really obviously saying, like, you know, this guy, you know, we went and looked, and this is, like, the best guy in South America. This is, you know, this guy is, you know, huge in Hong Kong. You know, this guy has performed in the Tokyo Dome in front of, you know, 100,000 people in Japan. Like, it's a really cool aspect of wrestling that I don't think any of us expected mainstream wrestling to do. Like, independent stuff, I feel like, kinda does this all the time. But maybe not on this scale. It's essentially one of the reasons that I think King of Trios is so great, because you get, you know, the older wrestlers, the younger wrestlers, like the international wrestlers. But this is happening in a thing that everybody can kind of watch. So if you're curious at all, sign up for the free month on the network and just watch that first episode of Cruiserweight Classic. And keep in mind that that's the first round of a tournament where by the end of it, they're going to be pulling out everything. And by the end of it, I mean Kota Ibushi versus whoever Kota Ibushi is going to beat. Because there's no, like, is there any way he's not winning?
I would be shocked. I think he's at least going to be in the finals. But yeah. One thing that's really interesting about the Cruiserweight Classic, because when we talk about Lucha Underground, we talk about how heightened it is and how filmic it is and how story focused it is. The Cruiserweight Classic almost goes in the opposite direction, where it's WWE trying their absolute hardest to make fake wrestling look like a real sporting event, like actual sporting competition. They're bringing the wrestlers to the center of the ring. The ref's like, I gave you the instructions in the back. This is something they never do on WWE programming. But they'll be like, I gave you the instructions in the back, shake hands.
Yeah.
And they'll get a little bit of like interesting storytelling in the shake hands part. Like there's a heel who refuses to shake hands in the first episode. There's a handshake that results in like a really intense stare down in one match. And then the video packages that we get for all the competitors, including the ones who lose in the first round, like a lot of times in WWE stuff, like you know who's going to lose because they don't get the focus, right? But even the competitors who lose in the first round get these like video packages that introduce us to them and let us know what their deal is and why they think that they're going to win and do well, even if they're losing in the first round. And it reminds me of the video packages that you see on like the Olympics.
Yeah, and like there's and like they have stories. Like the one guy, there's one guy who loses in the first round on that first episode, and there's like kind of a story that not only like makes him more interesting, which is that he had to drop 30 pounds to make the weight limit, but like that's a really good excuse for him to go out in the first round. Like that's really good storytelling. It's really fun, and one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is that, you know, I say it's very easy to get into. Because you've got the flippy guys, you know, you've got the fast flippy guys, but there are also wrestlers in there that are like Tajiri, like 40-year-old Tajiri is not like a flippy guy, but he's a dude who's going to make his kicks look brutal. And there's some British wrestlers in there that are going to be doing the British style, the escapology style. So you're going to get a lot of really fun stuff in the Cruiserweight Classic. I think I've been looking forward to it for a really long time. And I really, having watched that first episode, like it's everything I kind of wanted it to be. So highly recommended for everybody. Like I said, if you're curious, check it out. And if you are already into wrestling, you have seen it already because everybody's super excited for it. Matt, what's your rec this week?
My rec is one of the free games that you can get on PlayStation Plus right now. It is one that I kind of opted out of when it came out. Because I was a little burnout on Saints Row at the time, because I just played Saints Row 4, and I felt like that was enough Saints Row for then. But now I'm ready to get back into Saints Row, and I thought this would be a good way to jump back into it. It is the Saints Row expansion. I guess it is kind of a game all on its own.
It was a standalone expansion.
Okay.
So, like, same engine, but, like, big enough that they could release it on a disc. You know, new setting, new powers.
Yeah, I feel like the city is pretty much totally different from the one in Saints Row 4. Get Out of Hell, where you are, for the first time, I believe, not playing as the leader of the Saints, which is the character you create. Instead, you are playing at first as Johnny Gat, but you can also play as Kinsey, if you choose, in the game.
And I did.
There's just a lot of fun stuff to do in the game. You get to hang out with Shakespeare and Blackbeard. The hell setting is really cool, even though I find the demons that can fly around and shoot you to be very annoying. But I'm kind of in that position, like in that part of the game where it's not a breeze yet. Like I'm not powered up enough that it's easy. Like getting shot out will kill me. Because you eventually reach that point in a Saints Row game where you're basically invincible. And I'm not to that point yet. I don't know if I was totally sold on Get Out of Hell until I was playing it earlier this evening and it became a musical. And then I was like, yes, this game I will continue playing. If you're interested in kind of like a fun, definitely doesn't take itself all that seriously because this is a game where Satan and his daughter communicate with each other through song.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It is like I've talked about it enough. I'm in the tank for Saints Row, especially 3, 4 and Get Out of Hell. And the big flaw with Get Out of Hell is that, as you can kind of tell by the title, the story is built kind of assuming that you're playing as Gat. Like, it is Gat's story, which is fine, but I just really wanted to play as Kinsey, because Kinsey is my fave.
Yeah. I'm sort of switching between the two, which seems to be going fine.
Yeah, which is a nice thing about it. Like, you're not locked into one character.
But it's fun, and I'm having a good time with it. If you have PS Plus, absolutely download it and play it. If you don't, I think it's pretty cheap now, so you know you should still probably think about checking it out because it is a fun time. All right, Chris, those are our checks and recs. Let's talk about some comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
New Superman number one was my favorite comic of the week and my favorite comic in some time.
You know, Wacky Raceland number two came out this week.
it's a tight race, but I got to give it to New Superman, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. This was the one new comic of Rebirth that I think I was looking forward to more than anything. Like, I am a long time fan of Gene Yang's, going back to like when I interviewed him, I told him like, yeah, I'm a fan of yours going back to Loyola Chin. And he's like, wow, you're the one. So, I've been really looking forward to this, and it kind of, it didn't play out the way I expected it to. Cause I kind of expected that Kenan Kong would be like a good guy. And he's not.
He's a bully.
Yeah, he's I IM'd you, Matt, after I'd read it, and I was like, did you read New Superman number one? And you said, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it's what if Flash Thompson became Spider-Man?
Became Superman.
Became Superman. Yeah. And was Chinese. But it's, yeah, he's very much the kind of jerk kid who kind of has, like, a reason for being a jerk that... It's more complicated than it seems at first that makes him a more interesting character. I really like that about him, and I also loved that, like, the two people who are closest to him have LL names. Like, because that's, like, of course they would. Of course they would.
The art in this issue is by Victor Bogdanovich, and it looks great. It is a terrific-looking comic. But I love the way that it meets out these revelations throughout the first issue that sort of change the entire way you think about it, or like pay off things that are set up in the first few pages, like really satisfying ways. Because there's the part where you meet Kenan Kong's dad. As soon as you meet him, he's like, I've got to get to my meeting tonight because we're going to be writing, and we're going to be writing about the shadow government, you know, that runs China. And I think this is very important. It's what I want to be doing tonight. And son, anything you have to talk to me about, like, just stop bothering that kid that you bother all the time. And then several pages later, a representative of that branch of the government shows up to make Kenan Kong new Superman.
Yeah. And they've already been on the cover of, I think, what's been solicited already, and I think I've written about him at Comics Alliance. So this is a minor spoiler, but if you don't want to hear it, just skip ahead a little bit. But the last page reveal in this issue is that there's also a new Batman and a new Wonder Woman, both with hyphens, and I love them already. Like, they're great.
Yeah.
I love the look, especially new Wonder Woman has such a fun design. It's a really smart, engaging, fun superhero comic. And I think it's like, it's exactly the kind of thing that I want from DC, you know? And so I'm glad to see it here.
What I really like about it is that it does not do what so many modern comics do, which is set up a bunch of questions in a first issue without giving you any answers. You know, doing a bunch of setup without any payoff. There are payoffs in this first issue.
Yeah, it moves really fast.
It's not that it all is given away in the first issue, but there are things that are set up and paid off within the entire sphere of a single issue of a comic, and I appreciate that so much. I loved this first issue of a comic. I'm totally hooked on New Superman. It's great.
I think the best comic of Rebirth so far is one we're going to talk about in a second, which is Detective. But I feel like if you're looking to jump on a brand new comic, and I know we have like occasional listeners who are like new to comics, maybe even new to DC. Like, if you're looking for one thing out of Rebirth to jump on that doesn't require you to know anything, that only requires you to know who Superman is, then this would be the one where I'd say get to Green Arrow when you can, get the Detective when you can. But this comic is one that is a pretty A+ first issue.
Speaking of Detective, Chris, you read the newest issue of Detective, number 936. I have not read that one yet, but I really liked the previous issue, and I'm planning to. Does this issue continue the positive direction of the first Rebirth Detective Comics issue?
Yes, it does. But there's something that happens in this issue that I don't know how I feel about it. And again, it's kind of a spoiler. It's something that happens, you know, halfway through the issue. The basic idea, you know, if you've read the first couple, then you know that Batwoman's in charge of this team of Batman family characters. You know, all the kids in Clayface, basically. Batman wanted them put together to stop this weird threat that's coming. And then in the last issue, you kind of find out that it's this thing called the Colony that are these military guys styled after Batman. We don't know who's leading them. We don't know what their deal is, but they take Batman out. So that's where this issue picks up. And it's revealed in this issue that Kate Kane's father is part of it. She calls him in to sort of get his tactical expertise and help out the kids because they know they're being targeted. And then it turns out that he is part of it and wants to bring them in because there's something that Batman, according to him, there's something in Gotham that they need to deal with that Batman won't deal with. So they've taken Batman out. And there's a really cool exchange about, like, well, why did they pattern themselves after Batman? And it's like, and Tim Drake says, I think the line is, because Batman is a model that works. And I love that. Because he's absolutely right. Like, it's the same kind of thing that you get with the three ghosts of Batman, you know, the Morrison story, the Morrison and Tony Daniel story. Like, of course you would try to make more Batman, because you've seen what Batman can do. And I really like that. I'm not sure about the idea of Kate Kane's dad being part of something that makes him the enemy. And I will say, again, I think this is amazing work from James Tynion IV and Eddie Barrows. Well, I'm super excited about it, and I genuinely think it's the best thing coming out of Rebirth so far, along with like other really standout books like Green Arrow, like New Superman. But I really like that Kate had a relationship with her dad that was strained at times, but not adversarial. And I don't want him to be an enemy. And to their credit, they played this as him being like, no, I wanted to bring you in on this. I wanted, you know, this is a necessary thing. I wanted to do this with you. And that's why I've given you this, you know, this kind of support over the years as her oracle, basically. I want that relationship preserved. I want there to be something more going on. And again, this is, you know, we're nowhere near the end of this story, so I don't know how it's going to shake out. But the fact that I feel invested in those characters and the fact that this is something I genuinely didn't see coming, I enjoy the storytelling of it. I don't know how the actual event sits with me yet, and I don't think I will know until I see it play out. It's good, but every parent-child relationship in comics is strained. And I feel like giving, you know, bringing Kate literally into Bruce Wayne's family as his cousin, and finally kind of acknowledging that textually, I wanted family to be a bigger part of her story as opposed to a divisive part of her story, like a wedge that's being driven between them. As good as it plays out, I'm curious as to how I'll feel about it once the story's over. And I will say, Kate gets some awesome lines and an awesome reaction to it. Cassandra Cain also gets some amazing lines about it. Like, there's just a page where, you know, one of the guys says surrender, and Cassandra just says no, and then beats them. I love Cassandra Cain. I love Orphan. Really good comic, but I want the next issue now, which is the mark of a great comic, I think.
One last comic I want to talk about really quickly is the start of a new Rick and Morty miniseries from Oni Comics. It's called Rick and Morty, Little Poopy Superstar, written and illustrated by Sarah Grayley. Friend of the show, Kyle Starks, is doing some work on the main Rick and Morty series right now, which is really good. But what's interesting about this miniseries is that despite Rick and Morty being in the title, it's actually about a character who is, you know, on the show a lot, but is maybe a little underserviced by the show, Summer, the daughter, Morty's sister. and a character who showed up in season two of Rick and Morty, who Marlene and I cannot stop talking about and doing an impression of, whose name is Mr. Poopy Butthole, who showed up as a one-off gag in an episode of season two, and then kind of unexpectedly showed up again and had a weird character arc that you would not have expected kind of a one-off gag character to have. He and Summer basically end up going on an adventure in this issue that Mr. Poopy Butthole doesn't give her a lot of information about, but he needs a disguise for. And then seemingly they go to his home world and find out some interesting stuff about him. I won't give away any more than that. The art in the issue is really interesting because it's just slightly off model for Rick and Morty, but very clearly recognizably Rick and Morty. The Sarah Greiley nails the voices. She gets that exactly right. And I thought it was a fun first issue for a miniseries that I think is probably going to go some fun places. So if you have any interest in Rick and Morty, I think you will like that miniseries. All right, Chris, it is just about time for us to kick it over to our interview with Matt Sumo. But before we talk to him, let's talk just briefly about Loot Crate.
Now, Matt, that's Loot Crate, which you can get at lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax using the coupon code WarRocketAjax to get $3 off a new subscription. What is Loot Crate?
Chris, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service that sends you 8 to 10 items every single month of really cool stuff that is exclusive. That means you're not going to get that stuff anywhere else, most likely, and that you will almost certainly enjoy. It's less than $20. You are guaranteed to get a t-shirt in every box. This month's Loot Crate has a pin that is really cool and tons of other cool stuff. Here's another detail about it, Chris, for you, just so you know.
Okay.
Because it seems like you need to be in the know on this.
I have a lot of questions.
Each box, each month, is themed around a particular theme, okay? And this month, for example, the month of July, it's all themed around the idea of futuristic stuff.
Now, I'm going to guess, because look, the Loot Crate service, it's under $20, right? Like, to start with. Yeah. That's before you use the coupon code WarRocketAjax at lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax to get $3 off. It's like, it starts at under $20. So I'm going to assume, Matt, and look, no judgment, no shade, but I'm going to assume that they're cheaping out on these licenses, right? Like, it's got to be like maybe some hand soaps shaped like the seashells from Demolition Man. That was set in the future. So it's got to be something like what's a cheap license they could get? Oh, is it like, do you remember that show that was on Nickelodeon that was set in the future? It might have been part of SNCC. Remember SNCC? Do they have any SNCC licenses?
They don't have any SNCC licenses. It's not like The Last Starfighter. You know, I was just talking about Rick and Morty.
Uh-huh.
That's one of them.
Oh, okay. Well, so that's like a fresh, current, popular thing that you like.
Yeah. Like Futurama. That's one of them.
Okay. That's something people are into. Futurama. I see a lot of that guy trying to give people his money. That's Futurama, right?
Sure. Valiant Comics is one.
We love some Valiant Comics.
Yeah.
Talking about the far-off future of 4001 AD?
Here's another one, Mega Man.
Oh, okay, so I like that dude.
Yeah, in the year 20XX? Here's a big one for you. Here's a big franchise that's in this current box. Star Trek.
That's probably going to be a big one that maybe some people have heard of.
Yeah.
So you're telling me you get stuff people, like our listeners, are already into. They get it cheap, and they get it cheaper, and they support this show. They support you, and they support me. What's the downside, Matt? Like, is there a downside?
Not that I can really see, but here's a warning, okay?
Uh-huh.
The day that this goes up is going to be July 18th. You have until July 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to subscribe to Loot Crate and get the box that we just talked about with all those licenses, or you don't get it. Because when that cutoff happens on the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time, it's over. That box is done. And they start up the next month's box. So if you want to order and you want to get all that stuff we just talked about, you got to do it right now. using the offer code WarRocketAjax at lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax. Get your $3 off, get all that cool stuff, and get that box we just talked about. And now, Chris, it's time for our interview with Matt Sumo.
Joining us for the program tonight is someone who kind of blind emailed us, like cold emailed us, and had a very convincing, some very convincing patter to get on the show tonight. You will know him as the writer of A Dedication, which is coming out from Double Take Comics, and which you can read at doubletakecomics.com. Is that correct?
It's doubletakeuniverse.com.
Doubletakeuniverse.com, excuse me. You can read it at doubletakeuniverse.com. Please welcome to the show, Matt Sumo. Matt, how are you?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I had a very large, very strong iced coffee right before we sat down to record, so I'm feeling excited. I'm feeling ready to talk. I'm sure I don't sound this excited on the rest of the show, where I'm probably tired by the time of recording that. I brought up your email because before we started recording, we were getting into a conversation that I really thought deserved to be on the show.
Okay.
So for the people who don't like wrestling and somehow still listen to this program, maybe skip ahead a few minutes. But Matt, would you like to tell me how you introduced yourself in your email?
I said, my name is Matt Sumo and my client Brock Lesnar. And then I said, wait, no. The standard, you know, Paul Heyman introduction.
When you got onto this call, Matt and I were already about 5 minutes into a conversation. A completely unrelated conversation about Paul Heyman. I think the main idea we were getting at is what's your opinion on the ponytail? What's your favorite Paul Heyman look? I guess I should say.
Oh, definitely late 90s, early 2000 leather trench coat, headset, a baseball hat. Paul Heyman, totally.
Oh man, like okay, because there's a lot to choose from. Because there's, you know, giant cell phone, Pauly Dangerously,
giant cell phone, spiked. Didn't he have like spiked hair? Back, like way back. I'm going back. I think I might be going a little too far back.
That like, would be before ECW. I knew about him. Yeah,
it like stood up, kind of. It was one of those like. It wasn't quite like a spiked mullet, but it was in that arena.
It was. It's a very like 80s. Paul Pauly Dangerously, like he had the look down. And then of course there's, you know, modern no ponytail Paul Heyman, advocate Paul Heyman. But yeah, like Matt, you were Matt Wilson, you were talking too about your go-to Paul Heyman look. Like when you hear the words, does yours include the leather trench coat?
I think I just think of like a guy in a baseball cap with a ponytail. He might be I don't think he's wearing a leather trench coat. But, like, he might be wearing, like, a long jacket. I just imagine, like, I think of the ECW guy, like, when he would pop into the ring and give a talk, like, real shit was happening. It was like, oh, yeah. Shit, Paul's talking, something real's happening now.
Yes, Sabu couldn't make his dates. The thing that always gets me about leather jacket Paul Heyman, and we will eventually be talking about your comics, Matt Sumo, I promise.
No, this is totally fine.
The thing that always gets me about leather jacket Paul Heyman is that he would show up on, like, the ECW pay-per-views, and those pay-per-views were always in, like, the worst, like arenas that were, I mean, they were, like, you know, auditoriums, I guess. They were bingo halls. And so if you watch, like, I think it's, like, Heatwave 98 or whatever it is, you know, he comes out and he's got the baseball cap and the leather trench coat and it's August and they're in fucking Florida. It's just like how miserable did that guy make himself to complete that look?
That leather trench coat is awful.
It's so bad.
I get it. Like, I guess, you know, that was in style maybe at the time, possibly, but man, it's terrible.
You know, Matt, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to go ahead and say that all leather trench coats are terrible, with the exception of the one worn by the vampire hunter Blade.
Yeah, it was functional, I guess.
Exactly. Well, he had to keep his Semtex somewhere.
Was his sleeveless, Blade's? I'm like trying to picture in my head.
No. The trench coat was not sleeveless. You're thinking about when he would take off the trench coat and he would have his bulletproof vest on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have like a leather. He had like a leather vest. But here's what we how we really got into the Paul Heyman talk. I was just looking up. I don't know what how we got into just Googling and looking up Paul Heyman. Oh, because I think we were trying to figure out how to contact him.
Yeah, we somehow got on the subject of me saying, I bet Paul Heyman would come on this show, which is not at all true.
But so I just started like looking on for him on Google, and I discovered that he is 50, which is much younger than I thought he was.
Yeah, especially when you consider that like ECW was 20 years ago.
Yeah, he was not even 30 when he was in charge of ECW. You go back and see him as Paulie Dangerously, and he doesn't look the same as he does now, but he doesn't look like he's 23.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that led us to talking about Jim Cornette, who went from being a weird baby man to looking exactly the same for the past 30 years. He just now looks slightly older and angrier this year.
Cornette, I think Lucha Underground has aged Cornette considerably in the last 2 years. He hates that show so much.
He hates everything.
All right, well, we're out of time. So, Matt, you write comics, I think, and we'll talk to you later.
Sometimes.
Getting onto the subject of your comics, because, you know, you did say, hey, we can talk about my comics, we can talk about pro wrestling, we can just hang out or whatever in your email. You sent over a couple issues of Dedication.
Right.
And I have to admit, you sent over a couple of PDFs of ones that aren't available on the site, which I always appreciate because we always like to do our research so we have something to talk about. And I found it incomprehensible because I was reading the PDFs and I was like, oh no, like what are we going to do? Like what is – this is no good. And then I went and I read it on the site and I was like, oh, right. The reason the layout is weird in the PDF you send is that it's a digital comic that's meant to be read frame by frame. And when I realized that, everything read a lot smoother.
Yeah. Our books are built for digital first. What happens is the books are like kind of – like the visuals are blown out to, you know, be like frame by frame. Like you saw on the digital version, it almost kind of animates. It's not a motion comic, which is kind of like a dirty word in comics lately, or rather maybe 5 years ago. But it does kind of have an animated effect to it. So they are built for digital first and then, you know, made for print second.
Yeah, and you actually do some really interesting stuff. Like if people go to doubletakeuniverse.com, I think it's in the second one. There's a couple of really cool scenes that that play with like a first person perspective. Mm-hmm. One follows some zombies into a grocery store, and then there's another one that I really liked because it was very Evil Dead 2, and that's following the hand as it jumps off the roof.
Yeah, if you actually pretty much all of the books have some sort of like one scene I think per issue that is drawn from first person perspective. I mean, I know that for sure, because in issue 5, there's one, spoiler, issue 5 is not out yet, there's a scene that's also in first-person perspective as well.
So, I guess, you know, I've already mentioned zombies, I've already mentioned a grocery store, I've already mentioned severed hands. So, maybe, like, there's a very interesting hook behind some of the Double Take Universe books, so maybe you can tell us, and tell our listeners what Dedication is and what the larger universe is as well.
Sure. Dedication is a book that takes place in a supermarket during the Night of the Living Dead, George Romero's Night of the Living Dead. And why that is because Night of the Living Dead fell into the public domain pretty much almost right after Romero made it due to like a copyright error. So we took that and we're using his, you know, we're using that event, the Night of the Living Dead, as a springboard to build an entire universe on top of.
Right. And so yours focuses on a grocery store that is surprisingly undisturbed, I guess would be the way to say it.
For the most part, things get a little hairier in issue 2 and 3, and actually most of issue 4, too. The reason why it's undisturbed is because it kind of issue 1 starts like right as the Night of the Living Dead starts. So there's not much going on, and then the zombies show up and mayhem ensues.
Yeah, but even when mayhem is ensuing, I guess the guy's name is George, right?
Yeah.
Is the manager, the owner of the store. He is less concerned about the apocalypse and more concerned about the status of his store.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was a very, like, it's a, like, because essentially it is a, if I have this right, and feel free to debate me, you're the one who writes it. It's like a workplace sitcom meets a teen sex comedy during Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, basically. I think that I think we're going to use that on the graphic novel cover. But it is exactly it's basically him just trying to run a business during the zombie apocalypse. So he's kind of less concerned with the events unfolding around him and more annoyed by the fact that the events are happening around him. He's not really concerned. He's more just annoyed.
Well, it almost feels like a commentary on the sort of the Romero brand of zombie, the really shambling, almost, you know, sort of they don't have a lot of coordination. And they sort of just, you know, shamble together in a group. And one alone is pretty non-threatening. It's when they get into this huge group that they become a threat and a problem. But, like, there's a lot of direct references to Night of the Living Dead. Like, there are two characters that sort of read as kind of your version of Barbara and your version of Ben. And the way that the first zombie makes his way into the supermarket reads very similarly to, you know, the way that the first zombie in Night of the Living Dead breaks into the car at the beginning. But tonally, it's very different from Night of the Living Dead. So I'm really interested in how you and you know, whatever discussions you had with your collaborators sort of landed on that tone and how much to sort of directly reference the events of Night of the Living Dead in the story.
You know, we try to mirror a lot of the same things that happened. Like you said, you know, how the zombie gets into the store is the same way how he breaks the car window. So we borrowed a lot of that stuff. As far as tonally, it kind of just developed, you know, as we were building the story, the tone kind of, you know, took over, especially when we started to create, like when I created George, that kind of, he kind of informs the whole book. You know, he's like, he was accidentally made the main character. Originally, the character of Trip was supposed to be the main character, and then everybody in the office took such a liking to George that we kind of pushed him into focus and let everybody else kind of react to him.
I can absolutely see why. Like, I have talked before about how I'm, you know, one of the character archetypes that I love so much, you know, which one of the reasons I love Destro so much is I love the character who's in an impossible situation and he just wants to do his job. Like, he just wants to get this job done and everybody around him is screwing it all up. And so this guy who's like, you know, I think my favorite scene in what I've read of Dedication is when, you know, he ends that first issue by kind of getting all the zombies out of the store by taking all this meat and putting it in a shopping cart and pushing it outside and then, like, bidding them farewell as though they're customers. And then there's another issue where he he's like, okay, clean up all the blood. Like, we can't have blood on the floor. This is a store. And the girl's like, well, should I use ammonia or bleach or should I mix them together? And he's just like, oh, my God. Like, I really understand how, like, how he can very easily slip into being the main character of the book.
Yeah, he definitely is the most fun to write, obviously. I mean, the reason why I write this book, well, one of the reasons why is because I come from a retail background. I worked many years in a supermarket, so I bring a lot of that experience to the book. So he is kind of like an amalgamation of different bosses I've had. There's some of Bill in him. There's some of myself when I was a manager in him. So I just kind of bring all that stuff together and just, you know, it's hilarious. Like you said, like Destro, like it's hilarious that all this stuff is going on. He literally just wants to do his job and nothing else. And he doesn't, like, it drives him crazy when his his workers are like making out every 5 feet. And he's like, can you guys just work? Like, why? One of his favorite lines is, why is that so hard?
It goes from being a thing he says about, like, you know, make sure you put the when you restock, you put the newer stuff on the bottom, so they take the stuff on top before it goes bad. Why is that so hard? To, like, I told you to guard the store from zombies and you blew up a gas station. Like, why is this so difficult for you? Like, he really goes from being the kind of character that as a teenager I think reads as a villain, but like as a dude in my 30s, yeah, I'm completely on his side.
Yeah, it's insane, like, how you make that transition. Like, as a kid you'd be like, oh my god, this guy is such a dick, to as an adult you're like, oh, I totally side with this guy. This guy knows what's up.
So I want to hear some grocery store stories. I want to hear some retail stories. What you got for me?
Off the top of my head, let me think. I mean, I've left retail. I'm out of retail now, like, a couple of years. Man, it's just, you know, it's like anything else customer service related. You know, I spent a lot of time in the seafood department of this particular supermarket. And, you know, not only you have to deal with fish all day and just people. One of my favorite things ever, and this happened a lot, were like people that would come up and they would want to order squid, right? But they would say, oh, can I have the squid, but can you leave out the testicles? And I'm like, do you mean the tentacles? Like, yeah. And they don't even, like, it doesn't even register with them that what they just said, but they're just, yeah, the testicles. I'm like, oh, okay. But it was all that. There's nothing really like crazy, except for, which you'll read about it in issue 5. I was like 15 years old, and my boss handed me a box cutter. And at 15, I am not supposed to be using a box cutter. But he's like, hey, you know, there's a bunch of old yogurt and milk and stuff in the back. Like, can you empty all that stuff out and cut out the barcodes, because we're going to send the barcodes in to our distributor to get credit for all the stuff that didn't sell that went bad. So he sends me back there to cut up all this bad product, this disgusting dairy product. And so I'm back there, I'm like doing my thing. I had a yogurt in my hand, and like the yogurt, it comes in like that weird plastic, like little plastic bottle. And I'm cutting, and the box cutter gets stuck in the plastic. So I try to, of course, like a 15-year-old doofus that I was, I try to force the box cutter through, and I was holding it in my right hand. The box cutter was in my left. So I try to run the box cutter from right to left and ran it right through my hand. So, so I cut my hand wide open, which was great. Meanwhile, I'm like covered in like old milk and old yogurt and disgusting. So I'm like panicking. I'm like, what do I do? What do I do? I grab like a bunch. I like rip open a thing of paper towels, grab a bunch of paper towels, wrap my hand up. I run to the bathroom, and in my like hysteria, I run the hot water and jam my hand under it. Cause I'm like, oh, there's probably bacteria in my hand right now, cause I'm holding like all this old milk and old yogurt, these dairy products. I'm like, let me run my cut under hot water to burn out any of the bacteria like an idiot. So I jam my hand under hot water and I'm screaming in pain, like screaming. So I was like, wow, that was dumb. So I turn off the hot water and I go to like one of my coworkers in the store and I'm like, hey, I just cut my hand. Like, do you think it needs stitches? And I pull like the paper towels at this point, they were like caked in blood. I pull off the paper towels and I show them and they're like, are you kidding me? Of course that needs stitches. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is insane. So I run up front to the store manager and like he could see it. Like I run up front, I'm like holding my hand, you know, with the paper towels on it. And he's like, what happened? I'm like, I cut myself. I think I need to go to the hospital. And he goes, you're kidding. And like, there's like this beat where we're like looking at each other. And he's like, all right, go to the hospital. Somebody here is going to take you. Don't worry about it. Like, you know, don't worry about paying for anything. Like, we'll take care of it. Everything, you know, you're fine. Because I didn't know this at the time, but I was a minor. He shouldn't have given me a box cutter, so he could have gotten in a lot of trouble. I ran to the hospital and got stitches, and it was a nightmare.
So what you're saying is that you have a long history of associating hand injuries with grocery stores, which could have informed dedication.
It really explains a lot.
I mean, listen, that's, you know, those are the tools of the trade at the time. So
I want to ask you about process with, you know, this kind of comic, which is a little, you know, a little different from a traditional book where, you know, a page has a layout and a certain number of panels that are different sizes and the sequential storytelling is a little different because, you know, like we talked about, there are sequences in here where it's not quite animated, but, you know, we get a little more of a sense of motion because, you know, we're going one panel at a time. I'd love to hear about how you collaborate with the artists that you're working with on this. And I think Young Heller is doing the lion's share of the art on this. Am I right on that?
He did the majority of issues 2 and 3. He did a little bit of 1. And then I think 4, he did some of. He actually, believe it or not, he works for Marvel now. He did a lot of the book. He did a lot of the storyboard art and stuff like that.
So when you send, you know, Young Heller or whatever artist you're working with, J.J. Zielowski did some on the first issue as well. You know, what are you sending them? And how closely are you collaborating with them, you know, talking back and forth with them about what, you know, the book you're making here? Because I'm assuming it's not a traditional comic script where, you know, it's page 1, 4 panels, and then you give a panel breakdown.
Yeah, so for issue 1, it was that. Issue 1, I wrote a full script. And how that would work is I would send it in like 6-page chunks. And then, you know, they would write, like editorial would write me back and say, you know, let's change this, this, and this. Then going forward, you know, when they realized they wanted to make it more so for the digital versions, you know, they wanted to make it like storyboards, I would go into the city, to the office, and into Manhattan, and we would sit down and break down the entire issue from start to finish and what we needed to accomplish. Basically, we would work it in groups. So, like, what was George doing for this whole issue? What were the kids doing? What were the zombies doing? And then, you know, make sure we have these sequences from start to finish. And they basically would break us up. Like, I would go write dialogue and the artist would go do storyboards, and then we would put it together. I would get storyboards sent to me, and then I would fill in dialogue, or, you know, I would send in dialogue and they would edit it and things like that. And that's pretty much how it goes, you know, since issue 1. You know, when I wrote the full script, after that, it's been that process. So it's just constantly like meeting, and then, you know, I would get art in all different stages, and then, you know, we would go over what we need to accomplish, you know, in dialogue and action and things like that.
In your bio that's on Double Take Universe, you mentioned that you wrote, lettered and published a comic that got you the job there. But it doesn't say what it was. So I was kind of curious about what that process was like. Because, I mean, I think that's, you know, Matt and I have both been, you know, people who have kind of made tryout comics and done a lot of self-publishing over the years, too.
Yeah, I think I originally put the title in my bio. I don't know if it had gotten edited out or I edited it out. I don't really remember. But the book's called Until Death, and basically what I did was I found, you know, I saw this company wanted like pitches for their, they were doing like an anthology book, a horror anthology. So they wanted like a 7-page script. I was like, I can write 7 pages in my sleep. That's fine. So I sent them in 7 pages and they were like, oh, this is great. But we want you to expand on it. So can you like blow it up into 22 pages, make it like a one shot. So I did that. And basically, like, this was a company that
they'll let you like put their name on your book, but they are not going to, you know, they didn't pair me with an artist. They didn't do anything other than that. They gave me some ads to put in the book after it was done. But I found the artist on digital webbing. He was a kid. He's a kid from Massachusetts by the name of Michael DeCruz. He was in art school at the time and was willing to do it for a project for school. And I was like, I was in college. I was working part-time at the supermarket, of course. So we put this comic book together. And then, like I said, he sent me the art. I lettered it myself and then formatted it on – I used Kablam, who will do print on demand. And they'll also host it on their site, indieplanet.com. Free plug for them. I put all that stuff together. I kind of sold it, you know, family and friends, the usual stuff. And then I was sitting on like 100 copies of it. So I was like, all right, I need something to do with these copies. And then eventually I saw that Take Two Interactive was looking for writers. So I was like, all right, what's better than my comic book as my resume? So I put together my actual resume. Don't ask me why. A cover letter and my comic book. Oh, I'm sorry. They were looking for editors. They weren't even looking for writers at this point. So I was like, listen, I put this comic book together. Pretty much the only thing I didn't do was draw it. I can edit a comic book. So I put all that stuff together. I mailed it to them FedEx, because here's a tip for you guys. If you ever want somebody to open something, mail it FedEx. Because if a FedEx envelope lands on your desk, you're going to open it no matter what it is. So I mailed it to them, and then like – maybe a couple of weeks later, they were like, do you want to write for us? And, you know, I had intended to be an editor, but yeah, why not? And then I've been with them ever since. And this was actually in 2013, maybe late 2012. And I've been with them ever since.
That leads me to talking about lettering your own comic. You know, when you are forced to do lettering, you sort of, as a writer, you have this moment of clarity where you're like, I need to write a lot less words.
Yeah.
A lot fewer words because I have to fit these words into these balloons myself, and I can't just pawn it off on somebody else to letter it for me. And, you know, the way that dedication is set up, you know, if you read it in the print version, there are word balloons. But in the digital versions – the dialogue is in these strips. They're still word balloons, I guess, but they're strips that go across the image, almost like, you know, the text on a Snapchat,
right?
Kind of at the bottom of the panel, and I feel like that might be kind of limiting as far as the dialogue that you can put into one panel. Is that something you have to be mega aware of as you're writing?
No, I'm not aware of that at all. I can't like scale back. Like if I want a character to say something, they're going to say it. And if editorial decides they want to chop it up, that's on them at the end of the day. But yeah, I can't be aware of certain stuff like that. 'Cause then I feel like, you know, I'm kind of limiting what the characters can say. And I don't operate that way. If they're going to say something, they're going to say it regardless.
Like, how did you decide that you needed to be the one to letter it as well? Was it just a matter of, you know, it being a small budget, like two-person project? Because as someone, like, look, I've used Kablam. Shout out to the 30 people who have a copy of Woman of Action number one. I've been there where I've been trying to put together stuff and self-publish stuff as well. And lettering is such a make or break thing with comics. Like, the bad lettering, I know from reading them and from writing about them, like, sticks out to me. Like, I wouldn't, like, that's something that I've always thought about learning how to do, but that, you know, I've never, fortunately, very fortunately, you know, I've had Josh Croc, who does the letters on almost all my stuff, or Ben Birdie, who did the letters on Hard Ones, the first thing that Chad and I did. Was it just a matter of you, like, needing to get that done and wanting to do it yourself, or did you kind of figure, like, well, this is, you know, this is a skill that comics will always need, so I better learn how to do it?
I wish it was the second one. It's definitely more of, I'm broke. This is a no budget project. I definitely need to like figure out how to do this and do it. So it was kind of just, you know, I just sat down and just forced myself to do it.
So what did you look at? Did you like go and look at the, I know there's a DC Comics Guide to Lettering that Todd Klein wrote, like, or did you just, you know, open up Photoshop and figure like look at trying to put the letters on the page?
Yeah, it was basically that. Like I opened up Photoshop and I was like, I had stacks of books in front of me, and I was just like, here we go. Like this is how it's supposed to look. And then how it looked on the page was definitely much different. How it looked on the page of my book, it was definitely much different. But you know, I had no choice. I had no money. I couldn't pay a letterer. You know, few people want to work for free these days, which I don't blame them. It was just necessity.
Well, I used to letter Copernicus Jones at the very beginning when it was a webcomic. And I don't think I did a great job, but I just did what I could. And one resource that really helped me, if anybody's curious about a resource, was the Comic Craft Balloon Tales website, which like will tell you like certain ways to like shape your word balloons so that they're not just ovals, that they have a little like they're squared off a little bit, mm-hmm. and how to like curve your like the tails so that they're not just straight lines. That website helped me out a lot. So anybody who's looking to do their own lettering in the future, that Balloon Tales website might have some help for you.
Yeah, and also lettering's an incredible skill to have if you're working in comics, because if you can do it well, you will be head and shoulders above everybody else.
You'll have work forever if you can letter. Like they're always looking for. Like I know a buddy of mine, he's a writer too. When he's like in between books, he letters other books. So he's always working, which is, again, you know, they always need letters. So.
And I'll tell you, like when people come up to me at cons, and they, you know, and they want to show me their comics, which I always appreciate. Like I've got a stack of stuff from Heroes Con still to read. And I've read a couple of really good ones, from people who brought stuff over, but that's the first thing I look at. Like, the first thing I do is pop it open and I look at the balloons to see how it's lettered. So, yeah, lettering, it's a good thing.
It's a great thing.
And with that, I think it is time for us to move it over to some Twitter questions for you, Matt Sumo. Matt Wilson, if people want to get in on these interviews that we do each and every week, if people want to get in on the conversation, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, they're going to find themselves confronted with three shadowy figures. The first holds a giant cell phone and wears a suit that's too big and has kind of like a spiky mullet thing. And he says, "I'm the real Paul Heyman." And then the second one wears a baseball cap and has a ponytail and wears a leather coat. And he says, "I'm the real Paul Heyman." And the third one is fully bald, has cut off his ponytail, doesn't have a ponytail anymore, wears a business suit, calls himself an advocate, and says, "I'm the real Paul Heyman." And it's up to them to choose. Who's the real Paul Heyman? How will you know? It's the hardest choice you've ever had to make in your entire life. And while they're deliberating over that choice, choice that could determine the fate of the universe, they can go to twitter.com and sign up for an account. Follow me at @TheMattDWilson and Chris at @TheISB. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. And wait for one of us to put out the call for questions. That will be their opportunity to ask a question for our guest, like the questions you're about to hear from Matt Sumo, as they're procrastinating over choosing the real Paul Heyman. Here's a question. This comes from Tales to Enrage on Twitter. This is a question for all of us. And I'm not sure exactly what he's asking here, so this is up to some interpretation. Greg Black wants to know, who makes it out of a prison riot alive?
like out of everyone in the world? I think he means the three of us.
The three of us. Like, if the three of us got caught in a prison riot, who makes it out alive?
Well, I don't know Matt Sumo very well, but I can go ahead and say that Matt Wilson and me are dead.
Yeah, we're instantly dead.
Yeah, we're gone.
Yeah, I think I have to say that I'd probably be dead too. I'm 6'4", so I'm not really gonna fit in any like small spaces. Like, I'm just gonna be like, people are just gonna attack my knees, and then that's it. I'm done.
To keep up my personal brand, I'd like to say that I would somehow clever my way out of it, but I don't think there's any clevering your way out of that, really.
Yeah, that's a weird question, Greg. That's a weird one.
All right, then we'll just move on. This one is from 3:34 in the morning, Kyle Lee on Twitter. Kyle wants to know, this is again for everybody, who's your favorite wrestler right now? Matt Sumo, who's your favorite wrestler right now?
Character-wise and mic-wise, I'm going to go ahead and say Kevin Owens.
I think that might have been Chris in my answer as well.
Wrestling-wise, like pure wrestling, I really like that Ospreay-Ricochet match from Best of Super Juniors. I like me some cruiserweights. Yeah, I don't know. That's hard.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're, like, really... Just in terms of WWE, like, spoiled for choice right now. Because, you know, WWE's got Shinsuke Nakamura. I just watched Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor wrestle last night. That was great. I love Shinsuke. But yeah, like, character-wise, Kevin Owens is probably the most, like, entertaining heel in forever.
Yeah.
He's like, when was the last time there's been a pure heel that good?
Maybe
Sasha Banks.
I was gonna say maybe Jericho, like in the height of his heeldom, when he came back that one time and he like troll Jericho when he would come to the ring and like, you know, get everybody all fired up and then he would just walk away. Like, he didn't even have to say anything and he got everybody all riled up. But mic wise, maybe CM Punk, like just mic skills wise. But, yeah, I don't know. Heel-wise, he's kind of untouchable because he's a troll outside of like, everywhere. Like, you can't even tweet that guy without him, like, just shutting you down completely. Have you ever seen some of the stuff that he, like, retweets to people? It's horrible.
One of my favorite things he does is when people are, like, swearing at him, he's, like, he, like, tells them to go to bed. He's not even, like, mean about it. He's just like, you should be in bed. It's 10 o'clock. You should be in bed.
Or they'll say something about, like, the way he looks, and he'll just retweet their profile picture. And it's invariably, like, them looking ridiculous.
Yeah, so, like I said, Owens, Sasha Banks. Like, Sasha Banks is a huge, huge fave then and now forever. As Matt and I have previously discussed, broken Matt Hardy, probably best character going in wrestling right now.
The best. The best.
Yeah, last week we shifted from ironic enjoyment of broken Matt Hardy to genuine enjoyment. Aside from Kevin Owens, who I think is our universal answer across the board, the person that I was most excited to see come back recently and am most excited to see show up at any time, even though he still doesn't get what he should, I feel like, Cesaro. I get giddy every time Cesaro is on TV doing things. Like when he does like that corkscrew uppercut off the rope with his sunglasses on and the sunglasses stay on. How could you hate that guy?
Yeah, that I love that move. Every time I see it, I'm like, that move is amazing. Like, it just looks so good all the time.
If we're throwing Lucha Underground into the mix, I've been really impressed with El Dragon Azteca this season. That dude is great. The next question we have comes from Stone Cold, who is Stone Cold HCC on Twitter. And this is his only tweet.
You're kidding.
This one question. And I'll read it to you in a sort of Stone Cold voice. Matt Sumo, whatever happened to family love?
I don't even know how to answer that question. I have questions. Like, first off, did he just create this account just to ask this question? It seems like yes, he did. Also, family love as far as what?
This is all the context I have, that information.
I really don't know how to answer that question. I don't know what happened to it because I don't know the context of the question.
Right.
What's the family love?
Stone Cold, we can't bottom line it for you. Sorry.
Can we talk about how also this is his only tweet and he's also not following anyone?
Nope. Zero. No, zero following, zero followers.
Wait, but no, he has one follower. I'm looking at it right now.
He has one follower. He has a follower now.
Yeah, it is a frequent Ajax question asker at the Kais.
Suspicious.
I almost want to follow him and just ask him, like, what do you mean by that? What does that mean? I don't understand.
Yeah, maybe we could come back to that one with an update. This question comes from friend of the show, host of the Intuit podcast, and newly appointed assistant editor at Comics Alliance, L. Collins, at another L. L wants to know, you're trapped in a house with zombies outside. What three pro wrestlers do you want in the house with you?
Big Show.
He could stand in the doorway and block zombies.
Yeah.
He'll take a while to digest.
Plus, he's got those giant hands. He could just, like, smash them in the head. The Shockmaster.
Another person that will take a while. Like, he'll distract the zombies.
Yeah, or he'll just fall over and his helmet will come off.
Yeah, you'll get a good laugh.
Yeah, he's just there for comedic value for the pratfalls. Probably Sabu. Just because he would, like... It would just be interesting to watch what he would do. He would just go insane. He'd probably get eaten first.
You're probably right. I don't know why, but when I saw that question, the first thing that came to mind was Dean Ambrose. Because if you need somebody to, like, if you're in that Night of the Living Dead scenario where it's like somebody's got to go get gas for the truck, he will volunteer to do it. He's like the first guy who's like, I'll go get it. I don't care. All right, we have two questions here about the grocery store checkout line. The first one is from Mike Pankowski, who wants to know, which tabloid has better headlines to read while waiting online in the store, The Star or The National Enquirer?
I'm going to go for the unlisted third option and say the New York Post, which is an actual, like, New York newspaper, which has the most ridiculous headlines. There was one, I don't know if you're familiar with any New York scandals, but during this whole Anthony Weiner thing where he was, like, texting pictures of his junk to some girl, there was a headline, I'll never forget it for the rest of my life. It literally read, Obama beats Weiner. And I thought that was the most hilarious thing I've ever seen in my life.
I actually used to work with the guy. At one time, he was the guy who wrote the headlines, like the front page headlines for the New York Daily News, which also has those sorts of front pages. He was just constantly coming up with like the punniest, weirdest headlines.
I love it.
Because he couldn't help himself.
It's like a compulsion.
The next checkout line question comes from Lucas Brown, Lokified on Twitter. He sent us a box of snacks from Australia. Lucas wants to know, if you're at the checkout, are you more likely to buy gum or candy?
Definitely candy. Gum, I feel like, you know, you buy one pack and it lasts a decent amount of time. Candy is like instant gratification. As far as what I would buy... Probably those little, I don't know if you've seen them, like the little bags of like those miniature Kit Kats.
Yeah. They're not individually wrapped. It's just a big bag of unwrapped Kit Kats.
I'm sorry. I have never heard of this before. And I'm kind of glad I've never heard of it before. But now I did not know you could buy unwrapped Kit Kats by the bag.
They're just like little bite-sized Kit Kats.
Yeah, they're not like giant. Like the standard size Kit Kats, they're like those cut in like thirds.
Oh, this is America. We're getting there. Don't you worry.
Kit Kat minis. Yeah. They're called. I just looked up the official name. All right, one more question. This comes from Aitken Phil G. Phil Aitken. It's another grocery store question. If you are at the grocery store, you're in the cereal aisle. Do you buy just whatever cereal you want, or do you pick something you like just from what's on sale? Or there's the third option of if you buy the bag cereal, that is similar to the cereal you like, but it comes in a bag.
The off-brand cereal, like the
that's right,
the toasted cinnamon squares.
That's right.
No, I go right for the name brand, never on sale, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, or usually, you know, around the time when the movies come out, like the Avengers cereal, or the lately the Captain America Civil War cereal, or that awful Batman cereal that tasted like chocolate and strawberries, which was really weird. Yeah, I go right for the gusto on that. I don't wait for sales.
Matt Sumo has been our guest. Matt, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you for coming on the show. Before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online.
Oh, totally. Again, you can find us online at doubletakeuniverse.com, or you can read the first two issues of Dedication and all of the 9 other books that we put out. And you can find me personally online at MattManBegins on Twitter. And that's about it. Those are my two biggest locations.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. Seriously, it was awesome.
Thanks once again to Matt Sumo for doing this. Definitely head over to doubletakeuniverse.com and give a read to the first couple issues of Dedication, because it is a very fun story that does not read like a lot of other comics. But now, Matt, we have interviewed someone. It's time for us to be under the spotlight, in the hot seat, getting grilled. Time for listener questions.
Can we change the name of the segment to Getting Grilled?
We can. Look, it's our show. We are the sole owners of Clitus Media.
That is true. But we're just going to call it listener questions for now. And here's a question from our Tumblr from James J. McGee. He wants to know if we have a handy mnemonic to help remember the difference between Warren Ellis and Garth Ennis.
No.
I will say that at one time in my comics reading life, I did get their names mixed up a lot when I was just thinking about their last names.
I feel like that's a common thing for a lot of people, because I used to, like, a lot of people would come in to the comic book store when I would work there, and then they'd have them a little bit confused, especially because, you know, they're very similar in a lot of ways. Like, they both have runs on Hellblazer. They're both, you know, cranky European dudes.
And they were both
from the British Isles.
They were both Vertigo guys at the same time. Like, yeah. Transmetropolitan and Preacher were concurrent.
Yeah. I don't have a mnemonic so much as just, you know, I've read enough of both of them where I do not have trouble distinguishing them. Like if you're reading someone who's writing a very scathing opinion about the Troubles, that's Garth Ennis. If you're reading a comic where someone has a really fancy phone, that's Warren Ellis. I think that's the way to do it.
I think that's it. Like, they both can sometimes have extreme violence in their stories, but Garth Ennis doesn't really do, like, the techno stuff that Warren
Ellis. Yeah, like,
does.
Garth Ennis is not the technological near fetishist that I think Warren Ellis is.
Yes. All right, one more question. This is going
to
come from...
Yeah, okay, here you go. If it's closer to sci-fi, it's Ellis. If it's closer to literally just being Kelly's heroes, it's Ennis.
This question comes from Avenger Dave on Tumblr. Putting aside the fact that the Clone Saga went on for way too long, how do you feel about the Jackal overall as a Spidey villain?
I think the Jackal sucks. Talking about Miles Warren, I hate that guy. I think, what has he done that has enhanced those comics?
Well, he wasn't even like the, he didn't even turn out to be the villain of the Clone Saga. Norman Osborn was.
Like, the Jackal was like the start of the Clone Saga. Like, he made the clone Gwen Stacy, right?
Yeah. And he made the clone Peter Parker. He made Ben Reilly in the 70s. Yeah. But that's all he did. Like he's a guy who made some clones.
The Jackal is like Doomsday, or like Bane, or Bone Crusher, or like Chad had a thing a long time ago when we used to work at the comic book store. He called them prefab villains. Like, they're villains that are made for one story. And I've written about, like, how Bane is a really good character, but the further you take him from Nightfall, the less he works. Like, Doomsday, every time he shows up, it's diminishing returns because they can't do the Death of Superman again, even though they are trying their level best. And I feel like the Jackal is one of those, and it's just like, those stories, those are not my favorite Spider-Man stories. Spider-Man dumps Ben Reilly's body down a fucking smokestack.
He does. I don't understand why he's a Jackal.
I don't either.
He's a biochemist. He's a geneticist. He makes clones, and he becomes a Jackal to, like, disassociate from a murder he committed. But he just kind of looks like a ripoff of the Green Goblin. He's just there to kind of be a ripoff of the Green Goblin.
Yeah, like, he should, by all rights, just be a scientist.
Yeah.
And not, like, a, like, not have bat ears.
Yeah.
Like he does sometimes.
He's just there to kind of look like the Green Goblin, because at that point, Green Goblin was dead. Not big fans of the Jackal, I think, is where we're coming down on that. If, for more, submit the Jackal for panel president. And that's going to do it for our listener questions. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do so on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can email it to us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That email address is where you can also send every story ever lists, panel president lists. If you want to just comment, send us a comment, or just let us know what kind of job we're doing, you can let us know there. Or if you want to sponsor the show, email us there. Please check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that's where you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes, a positive review. Those help us out a bunch. And now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson to find my Twitter, my Tumblr, and links to my books on Amazon. You can also find my comic that I write and that is drawn by Kevin Warren, Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective, on Comixology. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Everybody can find my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims. I literally had trouble spelling my own name just now. I'm actually going to be trying to change around the-isb.com to serve as a sort of hub for with links. I mean, I really just need to write a new page, but it's carving out time is trouble. So if you have any advice on that, feel free to get in touch. But at about.me/ChrisSims, you can find links to Comixology and to Amazon. You can find links to the stuff I write at Comics Alliance by going to my Twitter page or my Tumblr, which are both under T-H-E-I-S-B. That's the ISB. And, of course, you can go to Comixology and pick up X-Men 92, which is the ongoing series that I co-write with Chad Bowers with art by Alti Fermancia, which is really a lot of fun. Number 5 is out soon, and that's the Scott and Jean issue that'll explain what they've been up to since the end of the Secret Wars miniseries. So please check that out, either online or at your favorite local comic book store. That does it for War Rocket Ajax episode 313. Matt, what do you think? Good? Bad? This is a good one? Give it letter grade me. Give me a letter grade on this one.
A++.
A++. Nice. You know what? I'll give you a letter grade. S. Your S rank. Capcom style.
Oh, damn.
Have a great week, everybody.
I got Devil May Cry'd.
Yeah! Flash.